Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome back to Get Your Popcorn Ready Podcast. Woo! This is your host Hatch with my boy.
Yeah, get Crazy your popcorn Cuckoo. Ready. We are back in the building. We got our boy Akbar Baja Bill Miller in the house.
He got it, yes, sir.
He got it, sir.
That was a touchdown.
That was a touchdown. I was impressed. Thanks for coming on the show, though. Man, this is cool, man. I like the setup, man. This is a nice, very colorful, man. Thank you. You know, I'm trying to match
colorful. You know, that's why he's trying to
blend them in with this.
I see that, man.
I was described as a colorful, you know, individual.
Yeah, on the football field.
So I'm just trying to keep it going.
Okay, I like
and
it.
The popcorn is edible.
Get your popcorn ready.
Popcorn. Yes.
Let me make sure it's not stale.
No, we don't do that.
No, I'm good. That's actually fresh. That's fresh.
Yeah.
So a man of many, right? Many talents. You're doing your thing right now, man. Congratulations on everything.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been a blessing. You know, it's one of those hard things. You know, I think every athlete knows, you know, when you transition, it's like, what's next?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And what gives you that same type of high, that euphoria that you got in the stadium. So I can't believe this is the longest job I've ever had.
Really?
In my life, you know?
Really?
Yeah, it's the longest job I've ever had in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
8 years? Was it eight?
No. So I did 4 years in the NFL,
okay.
10 years doing as a host of American Ninja Warrior.
So everybody, I know, you're probably looking at the show, you're like, man, I know this bald-headed peanut-head guy's from somewhere.
Yeah.
American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, you should come out, man. You're still in shape.
Yeah, I don't know how you do it. I want to see him fall off one of them things and bust his head wide open to the white meat.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Oh, damn, that's actually kind of graphic. But you know what's crazy enough? We've only had one NFL guy ever hit a buzzer outside of myself.
Did you have to do it before
Who?
You?
No, before. Okay. Yeah, Cameron Wembley. You remember defensive end Cameron Wembley?
I didn't know he was.
Yeah, we've had Sean Merriman come out, couldn't make it. Jordan Babineau come out, couldn't make it. We had Steve Weatherford show up, but then pulled up, said, oh, my back hurts.
My neck.
We had the punter from the Seahawks. I can't think of his name. John Ryan. We had him come out. But every NFL guy who's ever come out, except for Cameron Wembley and myself, the defensive ends representing, have been there. So I challenge you to come out.
I need to see the footage of you actually hitting the buzzer.
You can YouTube it.
I want to see that.
Yeah, absolutely.
The same course.
What's the secret then, since you made it through?
So, honest enough, my very first day of training, I actually only lasted 30 seconds.
Wow.
They told me to traverse. The muscles we work as football players and athletes are not the same as ninjas.
Right.
Secondly, we're 200 plus pounds, right? And so we're having to carry our body. We're so used to moving weight. You have to move your own weight as a ninja. And so it's so different, but I had to traverse this wall and this whole thing right here. I had no grip. I had none of that. And it was crazy.
Because you're activating muscles that you've never activated in.
Interesting.
It was humbling to get kicked out of the gym after 30 seconds of workout. It was so humbling.
So
I had to reset my mind. I had to humble myself. I had to, you know, kind of bow my head, come through. And I did 2-a-days for 3 months before I ran the course.
Yeah. Really? For 3 months?
Yeah, so one of the ninjas.
Just to get through the course?
Yeah, one of the ninjas took me in and said, I'll train you. I said, all right, man, don't make me look bad.
Was he a real ninja?
Oh yeah, Kevin Bull, he's I'm a top dog ninja. Okay. And it was crazy because I was nervous that I was gonna lose credibility. I came into this space as a former NFL player.
Right, right.
So, you know, whereas I have the athletic, you know, cred, I didn't have the ninja cred. I was like, man, I can't go out here after all these years telling people what to do and can't
you
hit
can't.
The buzzer.
First of all,
I had to do it.
First of all, yeah. How many black ninjas do you really know?
Exactly.
We're going to leave it right there.
Najee Richardson. He's one of our top, you know, he's one of our top ninjas.
Ain't too many black
Megan us. Martin.
Yeah, we don't do that. It's yeah. Martin yeah. Lawrence on the Martin Lawrence show. He was a ninja.
A different type of ninja.
You're right.
Yeah,
exactly.
But would you come out? I see how you try to loot that. You see how he's trying to sidestep like Obama or something?
You know, let's make a bet. Let's make a bet, ooh. Right? I bet you won't finish. I want you, you won't hit the buzzer.
I bet y'all make it further than you. How about
that's
that
bet?
Are you in this? Yeah, he's in too. He can't just.
So you remember this episode you had where the dude took off his leg and threw it?
Yes.
That would be me. I would have to take off my
leg.
Because my left hip is bad, bro. I couldn't do it.
We've had 70-year-olds come out. We've had
my
people
hip
with prosthetic.
Is 91.
Oh. Yeah, he's.
You win. You win.
But no, I'll bet you 5K. You can't do
visually,
it.
Visually, he looks
athletic.
That and, you know, youthful.
Yeah.
But that body.
It's
it's like Rip Van Winkle up under there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Rip Van Winkle? That's what you got?
Yeah, it's Rip Van Winkle underneath.
Wow.
I bet you 5K though. Bet 5K.
You already owe me money anyway.
You haven't answered the question.
You
should be
saying?
A politician.
You're on this entire time without even acknowledging it. Answer the man's question.
What are we doing?
You're going to do this shirt?
What kind of shirt? That's a nice shirt you got on right there.
See what I got to do.
Is that
your man?
Algebra?
No. This is an artiste, as you might know, John Michael Basquet, if I'm saying his name right.
Got the little crown and everything.
Okay, I see you. You got the Jordans and everything. You see how you're trying to get it. We'll circle back.
So, okay, so again, hosting, right? We talk a lot about
transitioning
and all that stuff, right?
So, life after football.
Was it something besides hosting, or was it like I want to be an actor? Because acting, people are like, I want to be an actor, and they think just acting is going into a movie or TV show and doing something. That's acting, but hosting is acting, right? Did you want to be like an actor, or did you really want to be just a host?
You know what? I saw myself doing something on TV. I didn't know what it was. I think the easiest transition was to get into broadcasting. And so that was kind of my leg up. And, you know, I was really insecure about my, you know, about my playing career. I didn't have the playing career that I wanted, especially in the shadow of my brother who, my goodness, I mean, just took the league by surprise and just, you know, he dominated. And so I thought when my turn came, I would have the same type of success.
Of course.
I didn't have that same type of success. And so leaving the league, I thought, who's going to give me a shot to talk about football on TV? And I remember having to go to San Diego, the local NBC station in San Diego, and ask for an opportunity to do the post-game show for the Chargers and the Aztecs, since I went to San Diego State, played for the Chargers for a cup of coffee. And they was like, yeah, well, you do it for free? I was like, yeah, I'll do it for free. And so that's how I got my jump in. And then after that, I started doing the auditioning in LA and trying to see if I can get acting and commercials. My dream was I was gonna get one of them big commercials and get them residuals. Yeah. I just wanted the R word, the residuals.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That never happened.
But let's go back. I wanna, again, you went to San Diego and you did this internship / profession, but you did it for free. Because as pro players, we all know, we leave, they love me, you owe me, you should be paying me. Like, no, you did it for free. Like, tell us about that experience, because as you know, a lot of guys are not going to do that, but that's what you need to do if you're really serious about the profession.
Was there somebody that sat you down to take that approach? Because obviously, like I said, we always have people, like especially trying to transition you, we're gaining or getting advice from people that have been there.
Yeah.
So like I said, was that your approach, or did you gain some advice elsewhere to like, okay, this is how to do it?
Yeah, you know, no, I didn't get it. I mean, I had people kind of give wisdom to me about how to get into broadcasting, but I realized one of the biggest things, if you look on television, you know, you look at sports broadcasting, there's really no one like me with the playing resume that I had. I didn't have an impressive resume, so I'm like, how am I gonna get in?
Yeah, hey.
If we want to compare our stats, I had a couple more stats.
Yeah, I had a couple more cups of coffee.
An
impressive resume.
Yeah, but I think you understand, like, when you're trying to, and this is before really the digital age really just blasted. You know, this is back in 2008 where I'm trying to find my way. And, you know, so I said, you know what, I'm going to bet on myself. And I know the only way that I'm going to get in and have this opportunity is if I bet on myself. So I said, I'll do it for free. I knew that that was going to cut me to the front of the line or at least get me recognized, where some guys were like, yo, you got to pay me to do this. And I knew because I had the same ego. So I said I had to reduce my ego in order to be helped. And so
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk. But it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
They gave me that opportunity, and that opportunity really jump-started my career down in San Diego.
That's a major piece. Yeah. And again, I just, because we've been there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and I know a lot of guys have been there, and they just, not that they want handouts, but they expect it.
Yeah.
And again, just because the touchdowns really don't mean anything anymore.
Well, because you've invested your whole life. At that point, I'm 27, 28 years old. I've invested my entire life into sports.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, I had no internship. I had no other job.
Right. Right.
So that was it for me. I mean, I was a bouncer at the Blue Tattoo in San Diego, you know, in college. But that was about it. I had no real job experience. And so I had to create my own internship.
Yeah, create your own lanes. Like,
right.
That's the best thing. Especially now that content is king at 2021 and 2022, it's way different. But yeah, 2008, it wasn't that easy to create your own lane. Again, because you're big on IG, right? You're doing, is that part of creating your own content as well? Because you seem more of, you're going to be going into the producing, directing type of stuff because you like to create your own content. Is that something?
Yeah, I'm still working on that part as far as, you know, behind the scenes. You know, I still very much love being in front of the camera, but, you know, I started my whole social media plan really based off of the fact that there was something that I was missing on social media. Not me, but was missing on social media. There just wasn't a great representation of fathers on anywhere, pretty much. Movies, commercials, you know, social media. Like, men, fathers are taking massive hits on social media. And so I wanted to show that, especially a black father, being able to show that, you know, I'm there with my kids, playing with my kids, and showing us in that. So we just take the highlights of our days and, you know, have fun games. But that was something that was real. I was like, I don't want to do all this fitness and do all this other kind of stuff and just kind of add to the...
Just be on social media with my shirt off all the time.
Well, I mean, if you can do it, like, let me tell you something. Sorry. Hey, look. If I had this area on point, I might have my shirt off a little bit more too.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you.
Hey, I'm like after this whole thing, I better get the secret to how you're doing it, because, you know, as I'm getting up
popcorn,
in age, man.
Popcorn, dog. There it is. That's the secret.
So after the popcorn, just starts popping, right? Pop.
Yeah. Right. But I like. But that's what I was waiting, and I was gonna try to interject, but the fact that you said it's not enough of us, being black fathers, black men, being portrayed, I guess, in a positive light, being involved in the kids' lives.
Yeah.
Like I said, me and you, we don't even got kids yet. He doesn't have any kids yet. God bless his soul.
He's a God bless his soul.
God bless
his soul. That's why he doesn't have enough gray on him.
Yeah. It's coming.
That's why you still have your hairline.
Exactly. Kids, boy.
Yeah, so now, like I said, how are you liking, because, like I said, when you get into, like you said, this digital age, obviously these social media platforms, how is it now? Like, you had more time, like I said, be away from the game, now be in your kids' lives.
Yeah.
And I'm watching you on social media like everybody else, outside of, you know, seeing your little peanut head on Ninja Warrior.
Yeah.
What is it like now being in, you know, being around the kids and they're enjoying you being around? What is that like?
You know, it's great because, you know, my kids don't have social media, so this is a way for me to control it and bring them into my space so their friends can still see them, go, hey, you're on social media, but they're not in it, they don't have phones.
Wow.
So they're not, so they're not into it. But
awesome.
You know, that's a great, I mean, that's a great way to obviously limit obviously exposure to right. like, you know, a lot that's, of that.
Yeah, so they're not going in to see the comments and seeing what people right. are saying. They're not looking at it. They're just saying, hey, we're posting something fun. There's something trendy. They get to, you know, get to become a part of it. Because for me, I was already tired. By the time I changed my focus on social media, I was getting ready to tap out and cut everything off. I was gonna cut Twitter and Instagram, and I wasn't gonna start a TikTok just because it was overwhelming. It just was like, what do you do? You're supposed to do this and you're supposed to do that.
So are they itching to get on it?
Oh, they beat at my door every day. When are we gonna get
Saturday?
The phone?
But Saturday?
No, so no, but it's 11th grade. I told them they won't get it till the 11th grade.
So, oh, that's okay.
Yeah, they won't get a phone
or
social.
Where are they now? How old and when?
13, I got a 21-year-old. He already has that. And I learned from my mistake because-
I'm giving it to him too early.
Yeah, so I mean, good kid. He's about to graduate from college, you know, praise God, but we lost our son like in his room on the phone. It's just wow. like, why do I need to engage with you when I have all of this stimulation from social
everywhere
media?
Else.
Everywhere else. Yeah, and right. so I just thought, if we give a phone and social media to our kids, that's it. Mm-hmm. And so I just said, you know what? They're not getting into the 11th grade. I might like come up and maybe do 10th grade, but right. they're definitely not gonna get it in elementary or middle school.
Man, I yeah. think you may be on to something.
Absolutely.
That a lot that of parents yeah. should adopt this way of
you can't manage it. Like parenting. I think it's so unreasonable for people to go, hey, you know, if your kids have social media, you have to stay on top of it. It's impossible. It's impossible to stay on top of it because you literally have to be there watching. I got stuff to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't sit there and look at every website and looking at everything. Right, yeah. And the exposure is so fast. They can get a hit that can change their entire perspective in 10 seconds. They look at this and they see three other videos that reaffirms it in another 10, 20 seconds. Boom, they believe something. You'd be like, hold on, where you get that from?
Right.
You know,
right.
so.
Yeah. Right. It's yeah. funny, as I found out so much information about what type of dad you are really from one video.
What was that?
That was the Packy Chip
video.
You almost died, but I watched it so many times. I'm listening to your kids in the background. That's what had me laughing. They're like, call the hospital.
Yeah.
But like I found out, again, being like lactose intolerant, yep. right? Found out like what's in your kitchen and what you eat.
Yep.
And how you said, I think you said it, hell. And then your little daughter's like, hey,
you can't say that.
Yes, and so yeah, I found out so much of like what type of father you are in that 12-minute video. The video is hilarious. Guys, go check it out on YouTube. It's absolutely hilarious. I had tears coming out of my eyes. But did you like almost really die during that?
I did.
Because they definitely thought, your wife was like, yeah, it's time. And
yeah, I had a panic attack.
So this is like, what challenge was this?
This is the Pocky Chip Hot Chip Challenge.
So this is almost like Hot Chip Challenge gone wrong.
Yes.
Yes, he's the gone
yeah,
wrong
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, it was gone
we
wrong.
We finally have a gone wrong guy.
Yes. I need to first, you know, sue my marketing agent because he just randomly, just sent me this mail and said, hey, this company wants you to try it. If you can, try it and throw it on social media. I was like, what is this?
Because you didn't have none of stuff in the house. You didn't have no milk in the house.
No, he didn't
give you no heads up.
I just saw that it was hot and I'm thinking.
Like, you didn't see Shaq on TNT almost die?
No, I hadn't even heard of it.
Like, okay.
At this point, I hadn't even heard of it. I saw it, I threw it off to the side for a little bit and then.
Man, you're the son of Nigerian immigrants. You're supposed to know everything.
See, this is it. This is what got me in trouble though. T.O., this is what got me in trouble. I grew up in a Nigerian household.
That's what you said.
We ate spicy food all the time.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
I was arrogant. I was like, I went to my dad, like, what is this nonsense? this spicy, this thing, what is this thing? And so I was thinking, there's no way. I've eaten pepper soup. Pepper soup is very hot. And I'm thinking, I'll just take this whole thing. And one thing I went, and then all of a sudden, it was getting,
I like,
no, bro, it was getting hotter and hotter and I couldn't, I'm like, oh shoot, like, it's not gonna stop. And
he said, my sweat's burning.
It was coming out of my pore burning. I thought, oh gosh.
And he's after, like, do I have a rag? I'm rubbing his head.
It was awful. I had a panic attack. I didn't know what a panic attack was until I had that. I would tell anyone, do not ever eat that thing ever.
It was so hot, he started talking in an accent. Like, I heard the accent come out. I was like, that's not, I'm telling you, it's hilarious.
Yeah, it was one of those things that, you know, blew up, and I had no idea it was even blowing up. It wasn't until my manager called me and was like, do you see what's happening on your thing? He's like, what is it? I'm like, I have no idea. And then it just took off. I was like, who would have thought that my misery would have been my first viral video?
Absolutely.
Right. So. That's how stars are born.
In misery.
That's how stars are born.
Well, if I had to do it again, I wouldn't. I wouldn't.
So that takes us back to, again, how you kind of got started. Like, let's go back to Crenshaw, right? Yeah. Crenshaw High School, playing football. And again, you didn't want to play, right? You're a hooper, loved to hoop, and I guess your dad, you started playing, your dad wouldn't let you quit. So tell us how that started, then going to San Diego State from there.
Yeah, so I had grown up here in LA, not too far from where the studio is, Crenshaw High School, and I had dreams of playing for Crenshaw High School. At the time was like the junior Lakers. Like, we were the top high school program in the country.
Yeah.
And I was fixated on that since elementary.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I finally make it there, and this is like, I mean, imagine a gymnasium full of kids trying to try out. Like, this is when Crenshaw had like a population of like 3,000 kids. You'd have at least 1,000 kids come out for tryouts just for the basketball team. It was that popular.
That's crazy.
So to make that team was a big deal for me. It was a big deal. That was my love. That's all I did. If you saw me as a little kid, I was dribbling a basketball and I had my backpack on. That was me.
Wow.
And I never wanted to play football, you know, because basketball players, you know, you get fouled, you think you're tough. You walk around like you're tough after a little foul. And so my high school coach, shout out to Coach Garrett, he kept, when I got to high school, he kept like, you should play football. I was like, I ain't playing that. That's like, that's for
meatheads.
That's not me. And so he would harass me every day. And then my brother graduated. He was a star player at Crenshaw High School. Mm-hmm. And one day, one of the assistant coaches, Coach Abbott, came up to me and was like, yo, you should try it. I said, all right, man, let me just try this thing. First day of practice, I cried underneath my helmet. And I just remember going, this is barbaric. Football is barbaric. And I was just like, bruises everywhere. The face mask hit me. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm getting fouled everywhere. It was so bad.
I'm getting fouled.
It was so bad. And I remember saying, hey, I can't do it.
I'm getting fouled. It's just a regular play.
That's going to be a teaser to this show. I'm getting fouled everywhere.
That is hilarious.
It was so bad.
Danny,
make sure you go back in.
And Dad said that he said he's getting fouled. I'm getting fouled everywhere.
That's where I was like, okay, I'm going home and I'm not doing it. So I told Coach Garrett, I'm not playing football anymore.
Right.
And he called my dad, which he knew my dad was a no nonsense type of person. I came home, my dad says, you did what? Mm-hmm. No, if you quit football, you quit basketball. And I was like, I'm crying again, like, no. And so I went out there. And I had no idea what I was doing, but.
Were you making plays? Just go out there and making plays.
Go get the quarterback. That's how I understood. A gap, B gap, go get the quarterback. That's all I knew.
And you could do that.
And I could do that.
So this is like a foreign language for you.
This is a foreign language. I played just 1 year of high school football. Right. And.
But you're already 6'4", 6'5", at the time?
Yeah, 6'4", and 3/4" at the time.
You passed the eye test for sure. Everybody walking down the hall. That's a football player right there.
It was crazy because he saw something in me that I couldn't see myself. And so I begrudgingly played football, but then found you know, something, found magic on the other side, you know, and then got recruited, got, you know, 5 scholarship offers. Because that was always the plan. Like, how do you get a scholarship to get out to Hood?
Yes.
And so that was it. San Diego State. I knew I wanted to be close enough, far away from home, but close enough. So I decided, I said, San Diego State is where I'm going to make it happen. And and I also had my brother there, too, because I never had that opportunity to play with him. So that was, to me, the best decision, to go to San Diego State and be next to my brother who could teach me the position. So big, that was, to me, was
so that's what I was about to get to. So is this Coach Abbott that told you to come out?
Yeah, Coach Abbott, yeah.
So how did he just see your size and be like, okay, you want defense? How did you go from just decide defense versus offense? Oh. And then, right, because I'm kind of
been a left tackle.
No. There's one thing, one defining thing. I was going to do the hitting, and I wasn't going to get hit because I did not like that about football. I was like, so there was never a time that I was ever thinking about catching a ball.
Receiver, tight end.
I was like, no, this is all you play basketball, you can catch. No. That was non-negotiable. Like, nobody's going to just take a free shot on me. I do the hitting.
I guess I should have known that because you were getting fouled.
And they tried to put me at tight end. I was like, I was defiant. I was like, nope, I can't catch. Don't throw me the ball.
You're dropping it on purpose.
Yeah, like, you're not putting me in offense.
So this, obviously, 1 year of football. What about the sport that made you, I guess, fall in love or gain some passion for playing that position and the sport?
I think it was driving to go see my brother at San Diego State, and we pulled up to, you would have probably played then when it was Jack Murphy Stadium.
Yeah, in San Diego.
Jack Murphy Stadium. I'm just like, dang, this is cool. And then I go inside and you see the fans, and that was the first time I was like, oh, this is kind of a, because I didn't really follow football like that. Yeah, I just followed it on Tecmo Bowl.
Yeah,
that was it.
Yeah.
Woo, Tecmo Bowl.
Tecmo Bowl. That's the only way I knew John Offerdahl, Dan Marino, Mark Brothers, Warren Moon, you know, Dave McGill. Like, I knew all the names because of Tecmo football, that's but hilarious. Never because I watched the game like that. But I saw that stadium. I was like, man, maybe I could do this. But it wasn't then that I fell in love with it. It wasn't until after my brother graduated and I saw his success where I thought, wait, I can do this. So it wasn't until about my sophomore year where I made the decision, like, this is something that I'm choosing to love, like, and I'm put everything into it. So basketball was far removed from me at that, out of my system. I still remember going to the head coach, Ted Toner, and I knocked on the coach's door and said, hey coach, you remember when you recruited me, you said, after my first year, I could play basketball as well. And I'll never forget, I'm knocking at the coach's door. I said, coach, you remember you said I could play basketball? He looked at me up and down and goes, I'm still waiting for you to become a football player, and shut the door right in my face. Wow. And I was in the locker room too, and all the players were like,
okay, humbling.
Yeah, I was humble. I was like, there goes that dream. Right. There goes that dream.
So again, so after that, you know, free agent, right? And you thought you were going to get drafted.
Yeah, I did.
So again, like, how was that letdown? Was that probably at the point, the lowest time?
That was horrible, man. That was horrible. Like, because in my mind, I thought, you know, I didn't have delusions of grandeur that I was going to get drafted in the first round, second round. But I thought at least like the fourth or fifth round. I was like,
somebody
going to get me. And at that time, too, I had played in 2 All-Star games. Right. I was East-West Shrine game twice because I had 2 senior years because of an injury.
Oh, wow.
I was like, for sure, I'm going to get drafted at least fourth, fifth. Fifth went, sixth went, seventh, man. Boy, you ain't never seen your boy cry. So I thought my life was over. That's what it felt like. Yeah. I thought my life, I was like, what am I gonna
no
do?
No tag on you for the first time.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And so I remember going out to a golf course, and I'm just sitting there thinking like, this is it. Because that was my world. And maybe 2-3 hours later, I get a call from my agent saying, you know, how does Silver and Black sound? I was like, sign me up.
Oh, really?
And then I had that chip on my shoulder. And it was crazy because I was the butt of the joke the entire time because my first number with the Raiders was 69.
Ew.
Ugh.
Wow. Ugh.
As a defensive.
My goodness. I mean, if you could imagine,
Wow. We're like, he definitely getting cut.
And you see that number coming.
And if you're wearing a 60 number on defense,
that's what I'm saying.
You're super weak. Super weak.
Yeah. So, and this is before Jared Allen made it cool.
Yeah, right. This is before Jared Allen made it cool. You had a 60 number. It was like, ugh, I don't want no 60 number. Yeah. And I couldn't go a day without hearing the jokes. But you know what's crazy? When I made the team, that was another proud moment for me. I got a chance to switch my number. But I remember, like an idiot, I was thinking, if I hide from the Grim Reaper, then they can't cut me. And I think it was, so the Raiders, they had the main locker room, and they had the auxiliary locker room. As you know, all the weak sauce were in the auxiliary locker room. I'm in the auxiliary locker room, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness. And I think if I'm not mistaken, I think it's 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is when you have to make the final roster cut. And we're getting ready to go out to practice, and I'm hiding behind the door of the auxiliary locker room, thinking no one's gonna find me. I said, I know they're looking for me, because I just thought they were gonna cut me.
Right.
And I'm sitting here, and I had my Nike watch on at the time. It was a big old fat Nike watch, and I'm just looking. It's 12:55, and I'm stuck. I'm like, if I'm late to practice, now I'm giving them a reason to cut me.
And then they definitely cut you.
Like, who the hell is he? Why is he cutting me? Yeah. And I was like, oh shoot. So at 12:56, I'm like looking down the hallway, I'm going like this, and I run out on the field, and I get a slap on the butt. I'm saying, shoot, they got me.
They got me. That's the Reaper. That's the Reaper's hand.
That was the Reaper's hand. Slapping my butt. Oh, come back this way. And it was Bill Romanowski. He goes, congratulations, you made the team.
That's crazy.
And I was like, I still have 3 minutes left. I still have 3 minutes left. And when that horn sounded, it was like,
I'm here.
I made it. And I'm just like looking at it. It was like one of those, like, crazy, you know, crazy moment from 69 to wearing, you know, my 90s number, you know?
Yeah. Was that 2003 or 2004?
That was 2003.
I think I was there. Was that Callahan's first year?
Bill Callahan.
Yeah, I was there. I separated my shoulder like third or fourth week in camp.
So you that went because Rod Woodson got hurt. He had the knee thing and
Me
Baron
and Shane
Robbins.
Leckler in the
Shane Leckler,
ever, the punter.
Me oh yeah, yeah, yeah. H Rod.
Yeah.
So hold on, we missed each other.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's crazy. That was 03. Yeah, 03. Bill Callahan.
Yeah. Yeah. We went to the Super Bowl later in the year.
No, before that.
Oh, I was 02 then.
You were 02. Okay, I was going to say, how did we miss each other?
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah, because I know.
That was there 02 then.
Oh, 02. Okay, yeah.
CTE.
We next. The upper room. CTE. We next. We all
no,
got
No, we
it.
Ain't.
Yeah, that,
we ain't French.
Yeah, I didn't know that. So you were there how long?
Like the third week I separated my shoulder.
4 minutes?
Pretty
much.
Four minutes.
Yeah.
I was a big name in the Bay.
Yeah.
After T left.
you were there with all the OGs though.
I mean, I know. Jerry, Tim, and Jerry Porter.
That was a stacked. I mean,
and
like,
Gannon was running
that?
The show.
Rich Gannon. We used to call him Dick Gannon. But later in life, I got a chance to, as I got older, talk to Rich Gannon, and I knew why he was that way. He was just like, man, when you become a journeyman in the league, because he was a journeyman.
Yeah.
And he was just like, man, I knew my time, my window was short.
Short.
And as a young guy, I came in bright eyed and like,
and why is he always so angry all the time?
Yeah, he's so angry. Yeah. So, yeah. And man, we had a great conversation afterwards, and I just learned so much from him in that conversation. But, and then also too, like, he was a family man then. I didn't have kids then, you know? So it was just, so it was weird just to kind of see how that all, that dynamic. And, but Jerry Rice, Tim Brown, Rod Woodson, Bill Romanowski, Charles Woodson, John Perella, Charlie Garner.
All those guys came from San Francisco.
I know, that's right.
I was over there.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. And how long you been married?
13 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah, 13. I actually have this beautiful ring to symbolize. This is the gear. It's a gear ring, and this is the work that it takes. And it's on constant rotation.
I'm about to say, you're doing this all day.
Constant rotation.
Wow, that's a great symbolization.
Yeah. So,
but again, because that's the whole thing. It's like we always say, well, we have to sacrifice, and we can't be happy when you're married. Like, those are, the biggest conversations when I have with married men about, hey, I don't know, you might not want to. And I just go running, and you're like, you're right, I shouldn't, because every married man tells me not to get married. Why would I get married?
Or they say happy wife, happy life. I hate, and I know it's a strong word, but I hate that saying. Yeah. I'm like, I deserve to be happy as well.
Absolutely.
So I believe in happy spouse, happy house, because both people are entitled in a relationship to being happy.
And you're both considered spouses.
right.
The wife's not just the spouse.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so.
So give us like your probably top three things of having a happy house?
Happy house.
Oh boy. I don't want to say, because I think communication is overused. I think understanding. Us understanding each other.
Compassion.
Compassion. Right. Being able to have that. Mm-hmm. Assume the best in your partner, I think, is another thing, because oftentimes your partner does something, like my wife might do something, and immediately if I assume the worst in her, I see it through that filter.
Absolutely.
And then I think the third one is probably the one that we use the most. What is it that you need? So oftentimes in frustration, I do it myself, and my wife does it to me, and then we've learned over time where you just expect her to know what, you know, what to do, or she expects me to know what to do. It's like, what is it that you need? So in a moment, like when we're in a tense moment, it's like, okay, I'm just like, babe, what is it that you need? Or vice versa, she'll ask me, what is it that you need? And I think, okay,
and here's not what you want.
Yeah, here's what I need.
Right.
It's a very powerful question to ask your partner. What is that you need in this moment? All right, hey, I need you to be very loving, or I need you to be very understanding. I've had a hard day today. It was, you know, X, Y, and Z. And she'll, okay, I'm gonna give you compassion, like, because this is what you're asking for.
But it just doesn't it doesn't instantly happen. So how do you get to that point? Okay, that's what she needs. But what if you're not a person that is capable of giving that?
Counseling. Counseling.
But again, but to your point, that's 13 years.
Yeah, 13 years,
of understanding and getting to that point.
Yeah, and we had counseling, so we didn't get to this on our own. Counseling, and you know, I know people say, well, what if you don't have money for counseling? I say find somebody in the church, somebody who believes in, you know, in your marriage, believes in marriage, people who are elders. Like, you know, growing up in a Nigerian culture, we were always taught to seek our elders. You know, your elders have so much information that they can give to you, and there's a respect. I think it's a little different in the American culture, where sometimes you look at an elderly person like, you're out of touch with reality, you don't know. Whereas I grew up in a culture where you seek your elders because they have
the
information.
They've been there, done that.
Right.
Absolutely. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, thank you guys for having me,
brother. Yeah, there it is.
Absolutely.
Get your popcorn ready podcast. See you guys next week. Peace. Amen.
Yee! Agba Baja Bia Mila.